Chapter 10. Meanwhile, Winterburn and Grace Milbury had also undergone their little experiences of the same homeward journey. As he drove off with her out of the town, the glances of people fell upon them, the younger thinking that Mr. Winterburn was in a pleasant place, and wondering in what relation he stood towards her. Winterburn himself was unconscious of this. Occupied solely with the idea of having her in charge, he did not notice much with outward eye, neither observing how she was dressed, nor the effect of the picture they together composed in the landscape. Their conversation was in briefest phrase for some time, Grace being somewhat disconcerted, through not having understood till they were about to start that Giles was to be her sole conductor in place of her father. When they were in the open country he spoke. "Don't Brownlee's farm buildings look strange to you, now they have been moved bodily from the hollow, where the old one stood to the top of the hill?" She admitted that they did, though she should not have seen any difference in them, if he had not pointed it out. "They had a good crop of bittersweets. They couldn't grind them all," nodding towards an orchard, where some heaps of apples had been left lying ever since the ingathering. She said, "Yes, but looking at another orchard." "Why, you are looking at John Apple Trees. You know bittersweets you used to well enough." "I am afraid I have forgotten, and it is getting too dark to distinguish." Winterburn did not continue. It seemed as if the knowledge and interest which had formerly moved Grace's mind had quite died away from her. He wondered whether the special attributes of his image in the past had evaporated like these other things. However that might be, the fact at present was merely this, that where he was seeing John Apples and farm buildings she was beholding a far remoter scene, a scene no less innocent and simple, indeed, but much contrasting a broad lawn in the fashionable suburb of a fast city, the evergreen leaves shining in the evening sun, amid which bounding girls, gracefully clad in artistic arrangements of blue, brown, red, black, and white, were playing at games, with laughter and chat, in all the pride of life, the notes of piano and harp trembling in the air from the open windows adjoining. Moreover, they were girls, and this was a fact which Grace Melberry's delicate femininity could not lose sight, of whose parents Giles would have addressed with a deferential sir or madam. Beside this vision scene, the homely farmsteads did not quite hold their own from her present 20-year point of survey. For all his woodland sequestration, Giles knew the primitive simplicity of the subject he had started, and now sounded a deeper note. "'Twas very odd what we said to each other years ago. I often think of it. I mean our saying, that if we still liked each other when you were 20, and I 25, we'd—" "It was child's tattle. H'M," said Giles, suddenly. "I mean we were young," said she, more considerately. That gruff manner of his in making inquiries reminded her that he was unaltered in much. "Yes. I beg your pardon, Miss Milbury. Your father sent me to meet you today. I know it, and I am glad of it." He seemed satisfied with her tone, and went on, "Colin, at that time you were sitting beside me at the back of your father's covered car, when we were coming home from gypsying, all the party being squeezed in together as tight as sheep in an auction pen. It got darker and darker, and I said, I forget the exact words, but I put my arm round your waist, and there you let it stay till your father, sitting in front, suddenly stopped telling his story to Farmer Ballin, to light his pipe. The flash shone into the car, and showed us all up distinctly. My arm flew from your waist like lightning, yet not so quickly, but that some of them had seen, and laughed at us. Yet your father, to our amazement, instead of being angry, was mild as milk, and seemed quite pleased. Have you forgot all that, or haven't you?" She owned that she remembered it very well, now that he mentioned the circumstances. "Ut, goodness! I must have been in short frocks," she said. "Come now, Miss Milbury, that won't do. Short frocks, indeed. You know better, as well as I." Grace thereupon declared that she would not argue with an old friend she valued so highly as she valued him, saying the words with the easy elusiveness that will be polite at all costs. It might possibly be true, she added, that she was getting on in girlhood when that event took place. But if it were so, then she was virtually no less than an old woman now, so far did the time seem removed from her present. Oh, you ever look at things philosophically instead of personally? She asked. I can't say that I do, answered Giles, his eyes lingering far ahead upon a dark spot, which proved to be a brougham. I think you may, sometimes, with advantage, said she. Look at yourself as a pitcher drifting on the stream with other pitchers, and consider what contrivances are most desirable for avoiding cracks in general, and not only for saving your poor one. Shall I tell you all about Bath or Cheltenham, or places on the continent, that I visited last summer? With all my heart. She then described places and persons in such terms as might have been used for that purpose by any woman to any man within the four seas, so entirely absent from that description was everything specially appertaining to her own existence. When this he had done, she said, gaily, now do you tell me in return what has happened in Hintock since I have been away. Anything to keep the conversation away from her and me, said Giles within him. It was true cultivation had so far advanced in the soil of Miss Melberry's mind, as to lead her to talk by rote of anything save of, that she knew well, and had the greatest interest in developing, that is to say, herself. He had not proceeded far with his somewhat bald narration, when they drew near the carriage that had been preceding them for some time. Miss Melberry inquired if he knew whose carriage it was. Winterbourne, although he had seen it, had not taken it into account. On examination, he said it was Mrs. Charman's. Grace watched the vehicle and its easy roll, and seemed to feel more nearly akin to it than to the one she was in. Pooh! We can polish off the mileage as well as they, come to that, said Winterbourne, reading her mind, and rising to emulation at what it bespoke, he whipped on the horse. This it was which had brought the nose of Mr. Melberry's old gray close to the back of Mrs. Charman's much eclipsing vehicle. There's Marty South sitting up with the coachman, said he, discerning her by her dress. Ah, poor Marty! I must ask her to come to see me this very evening. How does she happen to be riding there? I don't know. It is very singular. Thus these people with converging destinies went along the road together, till Winterbourne, leaving the track of the carriage, turned into Little Hintock, where almost the first house was the timber merchant's. Pencils of dancing light streamed out of the windows sufficiently to show the white laurestinus flowers and glance over the polished leaves of laurel. The interior of the rooms could be seen distinctly, warmed up by the fire flames, which in the parlor were reflected from the glass of the pictures and bookcase, and in the kitchen from the utensils and ware. Let us look at the dear place for a moment, before we call them, she said. In the kitchen dinner was preparing, for though Melberry dined at 1 o'clock at other times, today the meal had been kept back for Grace. A rickety old spit was in motion, its end being fixed in the fire dog, and the whole kept going by means of a cord conveyed over pulleys along the ceiling to a large stone suspended in the corner of the room. Old Grammer Oliver came and wound up with a rattle like that of a mill. In the parlor a large shade of Mrs. Melberry's head fell on the wall and ceiling, but before the girl had regarded this room many moments their presence was discovered, and her father and stepmother came out to welcome her. The character of the Melberry family was of that kind which evinces some shyness in showing strong emotion among each other. A trait frequent in rural households, and one which stands in curiously inverse relation to most of the peculiarities distinguishing villagers from the people of towns. Thus hiding their warmer feelings under commonplace talk all round, Grace's reception produced no extraordinary demonstrations. But that more was felt than was enacted appeared from the fact that her father, in taking her indoors, quite forgot the presence of Giles without, as did also Grace herself. He said nothing, but took the gig round to the yard, and called out from the spar house the man who particularly attended to these matters, when there was no conversation, to draw him off among the cops workers inside. Winterburn then returned to the door with the intention of entering the house. The family had gone into the parlor, and were still absorbed in themselves. The fire was, as before, the only light, and it irradiated Grace's face and hands so, as to make them look wondrously smooth, and fair beside those of the two elders, shining also through the loose hair about her temples as sunlight through a break. Her father was surveying her in a dazed conjecture, so much had she developed and progressed in manner and stature, since he last had set eyes on her. Observing these things, Winterburn remained dubious by the door, mechanically tracing with his fingers certain time-worn letters carved in the jamb's initials of bygone generations of householders who had lived and died there. No, he declared to himself, he would not enter and join the family. They had forgotten him, and it was enough for today that he had brought her home. Still, he was a little surprised that her father's eagerness to send him for Grace should have resulted in such an anticlimax as this. He walked softly away into the lane towards his own house, looking back when he reached the turning, from which he could get a last glimpse of the timber merchant's roof. He hazarded guesses as to what Grace was saying just at that moment, and murmured, with some self-derision, "Nothing about me." He looked also in the other direction, and saw against the sky the thatched hip and solitary chimney of Marty's cottage, and thought of her too, struggling bravely along under that humble shelter, among her spargats and pots and skimmers. At the timber merchant's, in the meantime, the conversation flowed, and, as Giles Winterburn had rightly enough deemed, on subjects in which he had no share. Among the excluding matters there was, for one, the effect upon Mr. Melberry of the womanly mien and manners of his daughter, which took him so much unawares that, though it did not make him absolutely forget the existence of her conductor homeward, thrust Giles' image back into quite the obscurest cellarage of his brain. Another was his interview with Mrs. Charman's agent that morning, at which the lady herself had been present for a few minutes. Melberry had purchased some standing timber from her a long time before, and now that the date had come for felling it, he was left to pursue almost his own course. This was what the household were actually talking of during Giles' cogitation without, and Melberry's satisfaction with the clear atmosphere that had arisen between himself and the deity of the groves which enclosed his residence was the cause of a counterbalancing mistiness on the side towards Winterburn. "So thoroughly does she trust me," said Melberry, "that I might fell, top, or lop, on my own judgment, any stick o' timber whatever in her wood, and fix the price out, and settle the matter. But, name it all, I wouldn't do such a thing. However, it may be useful to have this good understanding with her. I wish she took more interest in the place, and stayed here all the year round. I am afraid 'tis not her regard for you, but her dislike of Hintock, that makes her so easy about the trees," said Mrs. Melberry. When dinner was over, Grace took a candle, and began to ramble pleasurably through the rooms of her old home, from which as he had latterly become well-nigh an alien. Each nook and each object revived a memory, and simultaneously modified it. The chambers seemed lower than they had appeared on any previous occasion of her return, the surfaces of both walls and ceilings standing in such relations to the eye that it could not avoid taking microscopic note of their irregularities and old fashion. Her own bedroom wore at once a look more familiar than when as he had left it, and yet a face estranged. The world of little things there gazed at her in helpless stationariness, as though they had tried, and been unable to make any progress without her presence. Over the place where her candle had been accustomed to stand, when she had used to read in bed till the midnight hour, there was still the brown spot of smoke. She did not know that her father had taken especial care to keep it from being cleaned off. Having concluded her perambulation of this now uselessly commodious edifice, Grace began to feel that she had come a long journey since the morning, and when her father had been up himself, as well as his wife, to see that her room was comfortable, and the fire burning, she prepared to retire for the night. No sooner, however, was she in bed than her momentary sleepiness took itself off, and she wished as he had stayed up longer. She amused herself by listening to the old familiar noises that she could hear to be still going on downstairs, and by looking towards the window as she lay. The blind had been drawn up, as she used to have it when a girl, and she could just discern the dim treetops against the sky on the neighboring hill. Beneath this meeting line of light and shade, nothing was visible save one solitary point of light, which blinked as the tree twigs waved to and fro before its beams. From its position, it seemed to radiate from the window of a house on the hillside. The house had been empty when she was last at home, and she wondered who inhabited the place now. Her conjectures, however, were not intently carried on, and she was watching the light quite idly, when it gradually changed color, and at length shone blue as sapphire. Thus it remained several minutes, and then it passed through violet to red. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.